The good news here is that 80% of what people are suffering from doesn't need a doctor. And people can practice self-care if they have their own data, if they have their own health information, if they understand the roadmap of how their bodies work. I mean, most of us were never given an operating manual. So really what functional medicine is an operating manual for your body.
This episode is also brought to you by my friends at Plunge. Some of you know that when I met Wim Hof, the Iceman, he was instrumental in helping me cure my chronic migraines with cold therapy. I first discovered cold plunging on my journey to better health about 3 years ago. I was getting pretty serious migraine headaches from a combination of poor sleep habits, inflammatory foods, work-related stress, and dehydration. I had no idea what was going on. I was miserable, couldn't function at work or home, and none of my doctors could figure out how to solve my problem without addictive pain meds. I started slowly with cold showers and immediately felt the benefits. I knew I needed to take it to the next level and started cold plunging. I focused on optimizing my sleep, fitness, nutrition, and it all started coming together. I have probably saved over $20,000 in medical bills staying healthy and fit on this protocol. How much would you invest to feel amazing? For me, the investment in a cold plunge to feel like me again was priceless. I've lost weight, I'm more mentally awake and don't need coffee or Red Bulls, and I'm doing my best to live a longer, healthier life to be with my family. That's what I want. Cold and heat therapy is an integral part of my regular training protocols now. My friends at Plunge just released the all-new, all-in unit, which is totally redesigned and full of upgrades. Use my code BRY, that's B-R-Y, to get a better price when you buy it. Just go to plunge.com and check out the all-new, all-in, as well as their beautiful hot sauna units available now for pre-order. It's been one of the best investments I've made in my health. I guarantee it. This episode is brought to you by WeWork. Don't just work from anywhere. Your working week deserves a little luxury, like beautiful spaces to spark ideas in person, designed carefully for collaboration, and peaceful nooks with focus mode and awesome Wi-Fi. I love WeWork because I'm surrounded by like-minded people. It's a great place to hang out, network, or make good friends. They're even dog-friendly. Whether you're a solo entrepreneur or you bring your entire team, yes, your entire team, check out WeWork, because now you can unlock productive, flexible workspaces in over 180 locations near you, especially if you use the WeWork All Access Basic. Get 30% off your first 5 months by using code Brian, AA30, that's B-R-Y-A-N, AA30. Or to redeem the offer, just go to we.co/behind the brand. All right, here we go.
Hey everybody, I'm Dr. Mark Hyman. I'm a physician, an advocate for functional medicine, longevity, and empowering people with their own health data. And you're on Behind the Brand with Brian Elliott.
Everyone, welcome to another episode of the show. Dr. Mark, welcome.
Thank you.
I usually ask my guests, how did you get this job?
The job? What job? I don't have a job. I gave myself a job.
Yeah, so for those who don't know you, who are maybe living in a cave under a rock someplace, let's go back in the chronology and kind of bring people up to speed on how you got here.
Yeah, well, I'm a physician. I went to Cornell University, studied actually Buddhism, not medicine, not pre-med. And it was an afterthought, but I decided I didn't really want to go be a monk. So I decided to be a doctor and be of service in that way. And I ended up as a family doctor in a small town, Idaho, really always was focused on nutrition and lifestyle, studied yoga 40 years ago, was a yoga teacher before I was a doctor.
Yeah. So you were already off the
already studying
path.
Nutrition and the role of nutrition and health and disease. And I was already focused on that. I got sidetracked and brainwashed by traditional medicine, but came back pretty quick in my early 30s and ended up at Canyon Ranch, where I got a job as a medical director, and then had my own health challenges. And through my own health journey with chronic fatigue syndrome, mercury poisoning, Lyme disease, mold toxicity, the autoimmune disease, the list goes on, I was really able to sort of re-engineer my way back to health and understand the body in a completely new way based on this new paradigm that we're in right now, which is thinking of the body as a whole ecosystem rather than a bunch of different parts where you go see the specialists. And so that's what I've been doing. And I had my own practice for the last 20 years in an ultra wellness center in Lenox, Massachusetts, and written 15 New York Times bestsellers on health, and have my own podcast, The Doctor's Pharmacy, and basically have been an advocate to try to change the way we think about health and disease from the disease-focused approach to one that's focused on the science of wellness or the science of creating health. And when you do that, most diseases tend to go away.
Yeah, there's a lot there to unpack. Let me just say that I'm a big fan, and you've helped me along my health journey. As we were sort of talking off camera, how I abandoned the traditional route of, you know, going to see my doctor and then taking his or her advice at face value, as they were throwing pills and different medicines at me.
Yeah, that's what they do. That's what we learn how to do, throw pills.
Now, you know, that's it. My sister is a nurse at Stanford Hospital. She does great work. She helps save lives. And I'm really grateful for doctors who, you know, an acute injury. If I am surfing here in Malibu and I get my arm bit off by a shark,
God forbid,
the doctors can save my life.
Yeah.
If I have a heart attack or stroke, you know, I'm glad that they're
there. But
for all the other things that gave me trouble starting about 10 years ago, I'm glad for more of a holistic or natural approach or functional approach that you've had, along with other doctors who've been very helpful. But I'm really grateful for your work, and I'm excited to talk to you about it.
Thank you.
I know a lot of people who watch and listen to this podcast, they're in the same boat. You know, they're and it's even age agnostic, yeah. I think. You know, some people start having these symptoms or problems earlier on in life. It's, you know, it just depends because every body is different, right?
Right.
But I want to hear, we're going to talk about your new venture and we're going to fold that into the conversation. But I want to start with this idea of maybe top down in terms of the approach. So if you're feeling stuck, if you're feeling frustrated with the system, help me understand kind of where to start in the process.
You mean trying to solve your health problems by going to the doctor and feeling frustrated?
Yeah, because I saw every doctor from head to toe, and I started head to toe with some of the bigger ticket items. Started with, you know, the neurologist when I started having headaches, the cardiologist, pulmonary experts.
Yeah. I mean, let's just kind of use your case as an example,
please,
right?
I think
Brian mentioned to me earlier he had migraine headaches.
Yeah.
And, you know, traditional medicine is really good at making the diagnosis. And the diagnosis is made by describing your symptoms and where they are. So migraine essentially means a headache, and it's a certain type of headache. It's got certain qualities, and it doesn't tell you why you have that headache. It just tells you what kind of headache you have,
right?
But saying you have a migraine headache is the same as having a headache. Like, well, why do we have a headache? Is it because someone hit you in the head with a hammer, or because you have a hangover, or because you're dehydrated, or because you're eating gluten, or because your microbiome is out of whack, or because you have some environmental toxins that are triggering some chronic brain inflammation. So there's a whole set of different reasons. You could have a mitochondrial dysfunction. You could have, hormonal dysregulation, all of which can cause migraine headaches. And so in functional medicine, we think that just because you know the name of your disease, it doesn't mean you know what's wrong with you.
Right.
It's just the name we give to those people who share that set of symptoms. So the way people need to think about their health is it's really to take back their health from the healthcare system or really the disease care system that we have. And most doctors are really well-meaning, good-hearted, very smart people who want to do the right thing, except they were trained in the wrong model. Right. So they didn't understand the body as a whole ecosystem. We weren't trained to understand how to deal with root causes. We weren't trained to understand how to restore health. We're good at identifying diseases. We're good at matching the drug to the disease or the surgery or whatever the treatment of the jour is. But we're not really good at figuring out how to create health. And so what I would say to people is that it's really important to understand that you are the CEO of your own health, and you actually can, by understanding the real causes of disease and health, actually take control of your health. And the reality is that most diseases will not be cured in the doctor's office. I can't cure diabetes in my office, right? It's cured in the kitchen, on the farm, in the grocery store, right? Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the good news here is that 80% of what people are suffering from doesn't need a doctor. And people can practice self-care if they have their own data, if they have their own health information, if they understand the roadmap of how their bodies work. I mean, most of us were never given an operating manual. So really what functional medicine is an operating manual for your body.
Yeah. Well, it's intuitive. It makes sense now. It wasn't back then. Maybe I'll just ask a silly question, which is why aren't doctors trained in some of these other areas that you sort of fell naturally into, whether it's nutrition or, you know, finding the root cause instead of trying to just treat the symptoms. Why doesn't that happen?
Well, I think, you know, it's really a historical artifact of medicine, right? Yeah. So, you know, the Flexner report came out in the early 1900s and basically sort of called on medicine to be more scientific and start to sort of create specialties and created standards for medical education, which was all great. It was sort of up-leveling it to a more science-based approach. But at the same time, that was the era of the bacterial discovery of penicillin, and this sort of heady days of medicine where it appeared that if we could just identify the single vector that created the single disease treated by the single drug, meaning a bacteria causing pneumococcal pneumonia treated with penicillin,
right,
that we could apply that to everything. And we've spent the last, 100 years doing that with great failure.
Right.
I mean, we're seeing, as we have the best healthcare system in the world, we're seeing our disease rates explode, our healthcare costs skyrocket. And COVID was a great example that revealed our vulnerability, because even though we have arguably the best healthcare system in the world, spend more than twice any other nation, have the best technology, the best doctors, the best training, we were 4% of the population and experienced 16% of the cases and deaths of COVID. Why is that? It's because we are a sick population, and what we're doing with medicine doesn't actually address that. So,
One of the terms I heard you use was, we have a sick care system, not a healthcare system.
That's right.
And I thought that was very clever, but also it gets right to the point.
Yeah. And it's not, and like you said, look, I've had atrial fib, I had genetic issues. Tall, skinny athletes tend to get it when they're older. I did. And I needed a cardiac ablation where they did, extensive electrophysiological mapping of my heart. I had 5-hour surgery with top cardiologists at Cleveland Clinic. And I'm like, good to go. Like, I'm riding my bike, I'm playing tennis. Thank God. Right. But for most of the problems that we're suffering from, diabetes, heart disease, cancer, autoimmune diseases, digestive disorders, dementia, these are conditions, allergies, asthma. I mean, the list goes on, are really not really well treated by traditional medicine.
Yeah.
And we can't apply the same model and expect a different result. And that's kind of what we're doing. Alzheimer's is a great example. We've spent $2 billion plus dollars, over 400 studies, trying to find the single drug that's going to cure Alzheimer's. And it's never going to happen, because Alzheimer's is not one disease. It's many conditions with many causes, and each person needs a different approach.
I've heard you talk about Alzheimer's and different neurodegenerative disease. And basically, the main culprit, the root cause, is sugar.
I mean, yes. Yeah. I mean, for most of the chronic diseases, the biggest driver is insulin resistance, which heart disease, diabetes, cancer, dementia, all driven by, in large part or in lesser degree, by something called insulin resistance, which is where you, after consuming large amounts of flour and sugar, are constantly spiking your blood sugar, constantly spiking your insulin levels, and your body becomes resistant to their effect, kind of like the boy who cried wolf. And that high insulin level drives so much of the pathology. But there are other factors. I mean, there are many other factors besides just sugar in our diet. Environmental toxins, our microbiome, stress, sleep issues, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, metals, heavy metals, aluminum.
Heavy metals, right.
Yeah. Let's stay on insulin resistance for a second, because it's a term that I didn't know 5 years ago, but I totally had it. And I was, it's sugar, flour, sort of the white devils. As I was talking to Laird Hamilton, and Laird took me to school on the white devils.
Yeah.
He said, get rid of basically milk, dairy, take it out of your diet, take care of the white wheat,
white flour,
and the sugar.
Right.
And so without even knowing anything, I just listened to what Laird said, because he's a brilliant guy.
He could be surfing 40-foot waves at 60 years old.
Maybe he knows what he's talking about. But so how do you know if you have insulin resistance?
Well, this is a great question. So I think one of the unfortunate things is that doctors test for what they can treat. And if they don't have a drug for it, it's often ignored by healthcare.
Some of my doctors didn't even know the term. I said, I think I have insulin resistance based on my research. Like, what is that?
Yeah, well, like, that's even scarier.
Uh-oh. But
anyway, the point is that doctors, will check your LDL levels, because we can treat it with statins. And there's an entire pharma industry that trains doctors what to do.
That's cholesterol level, right?
Right, your cholesterol level. But insulin resistance doesn't have an easy fix other than changing your diet and lifestyle.
Yeah.
There are drugs like metformin that might be marginally effective. But the reality is that most doctors don't do the right tests. So you might have your blood sugar checked, but that's a late stage phenomenon. If your blood sugar is going up, you're already late in the game. They might check your A1C, But that's your average blood sugar for 6 weeks. And that, again, is a late stage phenomenon. They don't check your insulin level.
Right. And even it seems like a blood lab or a test is a snapshot of your blood at that given time.
So insulin levels are incredibly important to measure. And the other indicators of insulin resistance are, for example, uric acid, something often not measured at all. And even more importantly, are the type of cholesterol particles you have. When you measure cholesterol, typically when you go to the doctor, it's the weight of the cholesterol. It doesn't tell you anything about the quality of it. And you could have an LDL of 100 that's made up of 3,000 particles of LDL and very small, dense particles, or you could have it be made up of, you know, a few hundred particles that are really large, fluffy particles that provide no risk, even with the same LDL number. Mm. So we actually started Function Health as a way to help empower people with their own health data to be able to do deep testing on their biology with you know, what would normally cost $15,000 and be available only to concierge medicine, and most of the doctors wouldn't order, for less than $500 in a membership model, and being able to track your data over time and twice a year biannual tests. And so I think we really are in a moment where people can start to get this data on their own. You went to your doctor, he's like, well, I don't know what insulin resistance is. Well, he's not going to know how to test for it, but we provide those tests in a really affordable, accessible way, which give people a deep understanding of it with actionable insights about what to do for themselves to up-level their health.
Yeah, so Function is your new venture. Mm. And talk about your role, and then I wanna pick it apart a little bit.
Yeah, great.
So you founded it with two others.
So I'm co-founder with three others, and one of the co-founders was a close friend of mine, and you know, we were on a boat in Sardinia going to the Blue Zones. That was almost more than 2 years ago. And we started talking about this, and I said, oh, this is the future. And it was really clear to me that, you know, I'm one doctor and I've spent, you know, 36 years as a doctor and I have learned a lot, and particularly practicing functional medicine, you know, getting millions of biomarkers on tens of thousands of people. And I've learned a lot, and it's made me an expert, but I'm only one guy. And the reality is that everybody wants to see me or someone like me, and there's not that many of us. And your traditional doctor is just not in that program, not because it's their fault. It's just because of how the system is set up. Mm-hmm. And so we created Function Health in order to empower people with their own health data to create actionable insights that help them up-level their health and track their data over time using machine learning and AI in a way that I couldn't do. So in other words, think of me not just treating a few thousand people, but millions of people and getting billions of data points and using machine learning and AI to help guide the interpretation of that based on this new paradigm of systems or functional medicine and the science of creating health, and then giving them actual insights about what it means and what these tests mean and how to think about it, how to work with their doctor, how to be their own advocates, and actual insights about how to up-level their health.
Yeah, so as I understand it, it's a subscription-based model where you can sort of, it's a dream, right? Like what I always wanted.
It's frictionless. You know, healthcare is so much friction. You know, I don't know if you ever saw that YouTube video where they're like, if healthcare worked like the airlines, if the airlines work like the healthcare system, and it was like, okay, well, I want to go to Chicago on Thursday. Like, well, we can get you a flight next Saturday, but your bags are going to end up in Miami, but the flight's to Phoenix.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's so bad.
Yeah.
So this really removes all the friction and makes it really easy for people, just for the few taps of their phone, to be able to go to the lab, get their data. It all gets input in the system. They get a dashboard which provides their results in an ongoing way that creates really meaningful insights about what to do to help them.
Yeah. So let me restate to see if I understand what it is, and you can correct me. But it seems like, you know, for me, it would have been perfect about a decade ago.
Yeah.
While I was on this journey to be able to have more power, more control over my own health. Basically what it is a subscription system where you can go and get the proper lab work that you need to begin to figure out what's happening inside your body. This very complex system that we know nothing about.
Well, exactly.
So if I'm having headaches, it's the first stop on the train to figure out like what might be happening under the hood. And what, for the subscription, you get how many labs per year?
Well, I think, you know, you get over 100 biomarkers to start. And then at the mid-year point, you get another chunk of biomarkers because you don't need to repeat everything twice a year.
Right.
And then for you get to repeat the cycle again in a year, and you can add on extra tests if you want.
Yeah. So it's like a menu that you can And this, can you also consult with your doctor about which ones to add or subtract? Or
you can, or you can just do it on your own. You think, well, gee, I wonder if I have celiac disease or I'm gluten sensitive. You can check the celiac thing. Or I wonder if I have food sensitivities. You can check that. Or if so there's a lot of things that you can
sign based on your own research. It really is giving control back to.
Yeah. I mean, think about it. You know, right now, you know, you can wear a Apple Watch, or I can wear an Oura Ring or a biosensor, and you can get so much data about your health. Right.
Oh, yeah.
But if you want data about what's happening under the skin, there are companies that do continuous glucose monitoring, but that's about it. And so,
oh, no, you don't have to convince me. I mean, this is like, honestly, this is the dream.
It is. And so people can't actually get access to their own biological data. Think about that. And you have to go through an expert who then will be the arbiter of whether you should get this test or not. And the way doctors are trained, unfortunately, is as little as amount as possible.
Does your insurance cover it?
Well, that's part of it. Yeah. It might not, but we're trained to only do what's absolutely necessary to confirm a diagnosis.
Right.
Not as a screening to see what's out of balance to treat people. And what's really remarkable, Ryan, is that, you know, we were in beta, and we, you know, in the first 10,000 cohort, we've seen over 1 million data points. And the data we're seeing from it is remarkable. I mean, imagine being able to sort of do a study of 10,000 people.
Sure.
Where you're doing over 110 biomarkers, that would cost millions and millions and millions of dollars to get these insights about the population. And yet we have it at our fingertips. For example, 89% have too many particles of LDL cholesterol, which is dangerous. 95% have too many small particles, which is the thing that is an indicator of insulin resistance that your regular cholesterol won't check.
Yeah.
46% have elevated levels of C-reactive protein, which is inflammation. Again, a test your doctor may or may not check. 51% have high levels of ApoB, which is a very important cholesterol marker that's the most predictive of your risk of having a heart attack that your doctors usually don't check. And 51%, this is in a health-forward population. This isn't even in average America where people are eating at McDonald's every day.
Yeah.
And we also saw 30% who have elevated levels of autoimmune antibodies. So there's a whole epidemic of pre-autoimmune disease. And I don't know if this is post-COVID or what's going on, but it's kind of shocking. I've never seen this data. We see, you know, 17% have low vitamin D at the level that I think is already significant deficiency of 30 based on the reference range for Quest Labs. It should be over 45 or 50. We're seeing 16% have low ferritin, which is iron deficiency. And again, that level cutoff is 16 or less, but where your optimal level should be 45. Mm-hmm. So I'm not even talking about what are the optimal levels for these numbers. I'm talking about the conventional medical perspective on what's abnormal, which is a very, very broad range, right?
Yeah.
So we're seeing all sorts of insights here that are going to transform people's lives. We're picking up cancers before people even knew they had them in an early stage where they're detectable through a simple blood test.
One of my biggest regrets, I wish I had started lab tests when I was 20 or maybe even earlier. I mean, you could tell me. I mean, I wish I had lab results every single year from basically, you know, my late teenage years till now.
Yeah.
To be able to see what's happening. Like, you know, are my levels going up? Are they going down? Am I deficient or am I sufficient? Or, you know, I wish I had those markers because then you can begin
track
to see
it.
Trends. And
but I have to tell you, as a doctor, it's a joke. Like how medicine is so analog. I once had a guy from Merrill Lynch come to my office as a patient. I was like, so let me ask you this. How many decisions are you making based on data, like your computerized data and using, you know, software? Mm-hmm. He's like, well, all of them. I said, how many decisions do you think doctors make based on that kind of data? Zero. And so we're in a stage where now if I want to see what happened to my patient's cholesterol 2 or 3 or 4 years ago, I literally have to go into their chart. Now we have a digital version of an analog system. It's not paper, but it's basically a PDF, which is basically a scanned piece of paper.
Yeah.
And then I have to go back and look at each test over the course of the many years to see the trends. And I have to, in my mind, try to like create a graph, conceptual graph, and see the trends.
It's not efficient.
And then I have to go back and forth. It's ridiculous. So I sometimes have these patients who are like OCD patients and they literally come in with spreadsheets from like 10 years of their data and graphs. And I'm like, this is amazing. And I learned so much that helps me help them.
Yeah. So I'm one of those nerds. Like, I mean, I want to see
that. And that we don't have that in medicine is a crime.
Yes.
And it's leaving so much on the table of information that it actually is meaningful that people can use to actually treat their issues and actually improve their health. And so what function does is it takes all the friction out of that and makes, you know, you have a dashboard which tracks your data over time, shows you what's abnormal, shows you what you should do about it, recommends what you might want to think about following up with your doctor about. Gives you the information to go to your doctor to create decision support for them.
Yeah.
So it's sort of, you know, it's an AI-enabled, tech-enabled, data-driven healthcare model, which is sort of supplanting this analog doctor, which, you know, is problematic because when you think about the 9 million papers on PubMed, when you think about the 37 billion trillion chemical reactions that happen in your body every second, it's impossible for even the smartest doctor, if there was a doctor as smart as Einstein and Linus Pauling and, you know, every other genius on the planet put together and you added up all their IQs, they still wouldn't be able to figure this out.
Yeah.
So we need AI, machine learning, expert-informed, technology-enabled, data-driven healthcare. And that's what Function Health is about.
One of the most frustrating things when I get my lab reports is the interpretation. So talk more about like, so you just threw out LDL and HDL.
Yeah, great question.
And it's like now, because I'm a little bit more educated, just a little, I know enough to be dangerous probably. Is there the interpretation there? So I understand, okay, by the way, HDL is the good cholesterol, LDL is the bad.
So just to understand, there's really like a paradigm shift happening in medicine right now from our disease-based reductionist model that's organ system specialty focused to one that's a systems model, understanding the body as an ecosystem, as a network of networks. And so when you look at a piece of data, the question is, what lens are you looking through? Are you looking through the old lens or the new lens? And so what we do at Function is look through both lenses. Yeah. When you go to the doctor, you get your cholesterol. It's like, I don't know what it means. I'm going to go to the WebMD or I'm going to go to the Mayo Clinic website and get the latest on this. And they will do a great job of giving you a rundown on the traditional view. But if you, for example, want to look at LDL particle number, particle size, they're not going to give you the dietary recommendations to fix this. They're not going to tell you the root causes or whatever is really going on. Or let's say, for example, you get a positive ANA, which is a pre-autoimmune marker that we're finding in 30% of the people who have done this in this 10,000 cohort. It's a big cohort. They're going to go, okay, well, this is a positive ANA. It could be that you have an autoimmune disease, or it could be that you have a pre-autoimmune disease. So come back later when you're really sick. Or if you really have an autoimmune disease, you need to take an immunosuppressive medication, which costs $50,000 a year, or take steroids, which is going to hurt you. And if you look at the interpretive recommendations on Function, it includes some of that, right? It gives you the basics of what it is. But it also says, okay, well, what does this mean? If you have an autoimmune disease, what is the root cause? Is it because of Lyme disease? Is it because of your microbiome and environmental toxin? Or because you're eating too much gluten and you have a leaky gut? I mean, the list goes on. So it gives you a framework for really thinking through this new paradigm of systems biology and medicine, functional medicine, to give you a roadmap of what to think about and how to be empowered with that data to go advocate for yourself in the healthcare system or to try things that are self-care, like lifestyle changes or a few supplements that might actually make quite a difference.
Yes. I mean, thank you. Because again, we're talking off camera anecdotally. My issue was that the doctors were not collaborative. So the cardiologist didn't want to talk to the pulmonary specialist. And you know, my dentist who was checking my teeth and the roots, I didn't want to talk to the optometrist who just was checking my eyes. And so what happened was in my specific case for my specific issue with the headaches is that the cardiologist from the blood labs found out that I had a unusually high blood pressure and that my red blood cell count was high.
Yeah.
But his solution to that was so myopic, focused just on his specialty of the heart.
Well, if I have a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
Right.
And the problem is, you know, I hear this all the time. It's not because doctors don't want to do the right thing, but they're so narrowly trained.
Right.
So that, you know, I'm a family doctor, so I literally got trained in everything.
Yeah.
And I worked in a small rural town and I saw everything. So I really am comfortable across the spectrum of the body to start with. But if you're like an ophthalmologist and someone says, you know, my tummy hurts, or you're a rheumatologist and someone says, I'm having chest pain, they don't even know what to do next.
Yeah.
Especially how medical school is. It's so early on, people get tracked in a narrow specialty. So you go to third year, you get a basic understanding of everything. And by fourth year, you're like, I want to be an ophthalmologist. You can spend the whole year in ophthalmology. Then you go to your residency and you really don't learn anything about the rest of the body. in a way that actually is meaningful that can help you guide your patients.
Yeah.
You know?
So this sounds, I mean, this sounds amazing. How about, you know, I've heard about, I had Damon John on this show from, you know, from Shark Tank, and Damon said he got one of those executive checkups.
Yeah.
Is this, how similar or different is
it? Completely different.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, most executive physicals are, you know, kind of in the dark ages.
Okay.
They'll check for your blood chemistry, your blood count. They'll check your lipids. They might do a few extra things. Maybe they're progressive. They'll do vitamin D or a C-reactive protein. They'll do a stress test. They'll do a, you know, a
physical exam. Is it like VO2 max stress or is it like a
stress test? No, no. They'll do like, maybe they'll do a regular stress test.
Yeah. VO2 max,
No, they won't do, you know, looking at VO2 max, which is a measure of your fitness level and mitochondrial function. But it's embarrassing. Like when I look at what's being done.
Have you had one of those before, by the way?
Of course, yeah. No, I can't even say, but like, yes, I've gone to the top institutions and gone through it. And it's like, okay, well, you're basically an inch deep. And this is great, you know, to screen for people who have serious problems. But most of the tests that doctors do, aside from cholesterol, which is sort of a screening tool for lipids, most of the tests don't become abnormal until you're really sick. Like if you have an elevated kidney function test, it means you've already lost half your kidney function. Mm. You don't see electrolyte abnormalities unless someone's in the hospital really sick. You don't see, you know, severe anemia or blood count changes unless people are really sick, like, mm-hmm. you know, have infections or have blood loss. And you don't see liver problems until your liver is already starting to go. So you're basically picking stuff up kind of in the last few sort of minutes of the trajectory of the problem. And what's beautiful about function health is that we're going to be not just looking at your regular lab tests. We're going to be including genomic testing. We're going to do something called deep phenotyping. You probably don't, what is that? Well, your genes are fixed. Those are called your genotype. Your phenotype is the expression of your life washing over your genes and your body. So it's really where you are in time about everything. So it's basically what's happening with all your lab tests, what's happening with your microbiome, your metabolome, your proteome, your transcriptome, what's happening with the epigenetic changes that happen because you get older, what is happening with your mitochondrial function, your immune system. Mm-hmm. We don't check all that stuff. And then you'd be able to add in quantified self-metric data. For example, all the biosensors, your Oura Ring or Apple Watch or Garmin or whatever you're using, that will feed into the system. And then we'll be able to scrape your old medical records and pull in all old data as well as potentially future imaging data. So we're able to get, you know, literally petabytes of data on yourself. You know, just think about how much data there is in your regular lab tests, right? It's, you know, maybe, I don't even know if it's a megabyte of data that you're going to get from your lab test, right? Yeah.
Although mine are significantly more detailed now than they used to be.
Yeah, great. Okay, so maybe it's 2 megabytes of data.
Yeah.
But we're talking about petabytes of data. And in your microbiome alone, there's 100,000 terabytes of data from the microbiome. How are doctors using that data to inform their decisions about what to do? They're not.
Yeah.
And so we're not quite there yet, but when we come, we're at the largest inflection point in history. It's one of the biggest industries that's going to transform, which is the intersection of healthcare and AI. And I don't mean just AI to inform better ways of doing the same thing better, right? It's like rearranging the deck chairs in the Titanic. And that will happen. You know, like we're going to have, you know, radiologists that are, you know, not so much needed because you're going to have AI reading the x-rays. You're going to have dermatologists, you know, supplanted by great people AI reading dermatology scans or your retinal scans. I mean, AI is already better at all that than the average doctor, right?
Sure.
Because the AI might have seen millions of eyes, whereas the average ophthalmologist might have seen thousands of eyes, right?
Yeah.
And so we're going to be actually, we'll take, you know, a much, much more deep approach to understanding all these factors using the operating system of systems biology and medicine and functional medicine to inform it. And then having machine learning AI on the back end make sense of all this data and see the patterns in the data we might not even be seeing. So I've been doing this for decades and I see all sorts of patterns in the data that maybe other doctors don't see. But I'm only one guy and I've only had one life experience and it's only a fraction of what there is to be discovered. And so that's what's really exciting about this. So I think, you know, function health really has the potential to be the hub and the center for at the epicenter for people's health and healthcare.
Yeah, I mean, so how do you see this layering in then with traditional medicine? So once I send them for function, I get my lab results. I can interpret those.
Yeah.
I have an idea of what's happening with me. Then do I then take it into my doctor?
Yeah, I mean, there's two things. One is, like I said earlier, 80% of the things that are going to make you better, you don't need a doctor for, right? Your lifestyle, what you eat, how you move, how you deal with stress, sleep, your basic nutritional supplements, basic, you know, biohacking stuff that you can do, hot and cold plunges, whatever. Those are things that you really don't need healthcare for. And 80% of health happens outside of the doctor's office. If you do need to go to the doctor, and there's, we go through like, oh geez, you should go see your doctor, or here's what you need to go immediately get checked. And here's the recommendations if you do go, what to do. You're going to be able to provide them with all the data that'll be able to help them make decisions about what to do. You can provide them with the content as well. And so it's really a collaboration, right? It's an AI-informed doctor as opposed to not. And I think we're not replacing doctors. We're basically creating a whole disruptive model where people can actually access their own biological data. I mean, think about industries that happened before, you know, like that push from the outside, like an iPod. Right?
Yeah.
Apple was a computer company. It disrupted the music industry.
Well, let's talk about disruption. Have you had any pushback from the medical industry yet? Like,
I don't think
how
they know
dare
we're,
you?
I don't think they know we're around. But there's been a little bit of comments here and there. It's like, well, you know, you're doing all these tests, and a lot of these are unnecessary tests, and the doctors are not going to know how to interpret them, and it's going to cause such, you know, stress for the doctors when they come in with all these results and disrupt their practice, and they're not going to be happy about it. And I'm like, okay, like, if you're driving a horse and buggy, you can't get mad if someone brings in a car and tells you, I want you to help me with my car.
Yeah. One of the scariest phrases is this idea of, we've always done it like this.
Yeah.
You know, if nothing's going to change, then it's scary. But I can imagine my doctor, at least three or four of them that I can think of with big egos, me walking in there with my lab results saying, by the way, you missed this, or, you know, you should have checked for this.
It's embarrassing.
You dummy. Like,
it's kind of embarrassing, but there's, you know, the thing is, there are plenty of doctors out there now, the younger doctors and even older doctors, who understand this transition that's happening. You kind of have to be an ostrich and not be paying attention to see the rapid change in science and in biology and, you know, the microbiome. Whenever anybody actually, you know, sort of challenges this, I just say, just ask your doctor about the microbiome.
Yeah.
How does the microbiome, which is all the gut bacteria you have, how does that actually be a factor in causing heart disease and obesity and cancer and diabetes and depression and Alzheimer's and autoimmune disease and asthma? And I mean, the list goes on. So there's no way for them to explain that. So you explain that to me. How does that work? They're going, well, I have no clue. But it speaks to this kind of paradigm shift that we're seeing. And we can't ignore it. Because we just don't know anything about it, doesn't mean we can ignore it.
Agreed. And that's ultimately why I was forced, painted into a corner, so to speak, with no other options than to take personal responsibility for my own health. I'm glad this is here, finally. So if signing up for the service is the first step, getting your labs done is the second step, let's give some practical advice to people who are really struggling right now, who might not be feeling their best. They've been suffering with something. Where should they start once they get those lab results? How should they start, you know, doing that 80% of whatever doesn't require seeing a doctor?
Like, well, when you really, the process is very simple. You sign up for function.
Yeah.
You sign up for the wait list. When you get off the wait list, you basically get a text that says, where do you live and when do you want to go? And they give you the zip code, they give you an appointment time, they give you some text instructions, you know, drink plenty of water, don't eat after dinner, you know, blah, blah, blah. You show up at the lab, you check in, it's 15 minutes in and out, you get your blood drawn, and then you wait, and the results come back in, usually 2 to 4 weeks later, depending on the results.
Yeah.
Goes into a dashboard, and the dashboard will say, here's what's in range, here's what's out of range. And this is, by the way, right now, just in the normal reference ranges, not what I would say are the optimal ranges. So I think your vitamin D should be 45 based on the literature. The Quest reference range is 30 or less. Why? Because everybody in America is vitamin D deficient because we work and live inside, right? So I think if you had a bunch of surfers, the average level would be 50, right? So I think we kind of give you that data. And then you get detailed instructions based on the biomarker of what it means, why it matters, what the causes of any abnormality could be, what the symptoms could be, what basic self-care guidelines we would recommend around diet, exercise, stress reduction, okay. supplements.
So there's some specifics
yeah. there. And then what the follow-up would be if you're, for example, if we see someone has, you know, a biomarker of a high tumor marker for cancer, we go see your doctor right away and get worked up for this cancer.
Yeah.
Or if we see, you know, someone who's got, you know, a blood count where they're really anemic, who's like a 60-year-old man, I would say, gee, you know, immediately go see your doctor, get checked for gastrointestinal bleeding or for a bone marrow disease or whatever. The list goes on. So we basically give you guidelines about how to think about your health and be empowered with that so you can work with your doctor in a proactive way.
Yeah.
We don't replace the doctor. We're not giving, you know, prescriptions, but we're basically giving people support of education about what they can do.
Yeah, well, I think it's really what's missing is what is really happening under the hood and how can I take more responsibility, whether it's nutritional or daily routines. Talk to me about your daily routines. What do you have, like morning?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. For sure.
You're traveling now.
Yeah. I try to stay with friends and do stuff. But so for example, the friend I'm staying with, you know, I wake up. I generally, if I have a little extra time, I've been busy lately, but I usually sort of try to do journaling and meditate in the morning a little bit. Then I'll do my workout and I use bands because I travel. So I carry like basically less than a pound, bunch of bands, and I can work out. All I need is a floor and a doorknob, basically. Mm-hmm. And I can do a full workout. I do that for 30 minutes, high intensity. If I have time, I'll do other workouts in the day, but that's my kind of core. And then I'll usually take a sauna or a cold plunge, if I have access to it. Mm-hmm. I will then make my healthy aging shake because I'm going to be 64 next month. So I got to keep up with the things I need. So I take a good protein load on a fasted state after about a 14-hour fast.
Are you on like a pea protein, whey protein?
I'm going to give you the whole thing.
Yeah.
So then I think, you know, as we look at the data, what is the most effective protein for building muscle? And muscle is the currency of longevity. It's where your metabolism is. You lose muscle as you age, so you get more resistant to building muscle. So I use a high quality goat whey, regenerally raised goat whey, as opposed to cow whey. It has less inflammatory properties. I put in there a number of compounds that are help, like urolithin A, which helps your mitochondria. I put in the probiotics. I put in creatine, and I take my supplements. And that's basically my morning routine. And you know, within an hour and a half, I'm basically kind of tuned up for the day and I can go about my day. And if I have more time, I'll do other stuff. Mm-hmm. But
and that sort of implies or is baked in that you've been doing a normal fast, you know, a 12-hour fast. So you maybe stopped eating at 6 or 7 o'clock at night.
I mean, look, everybody should do 12 hours between dinner and breakfast. No negotiation. Yeah. Some people can do longer, like 14, 16 hours. But if you have dinner at 6 at night and you have breakfast at 8 in the morning, that's a 14-hour fast.
Yeah. It's sufficient.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely noticed, you know, in my case, and it was pretty basic. You know, it's everything that you would guess. It's nutrition. Well, actually, it started with sleep, nutrition, and then, you know, pretty disciplined fitness.
Yeah.
So getting back into the gym, weight training, strength training, mobility training, things that you're talking about.
Yeah.
And then how about at night? Are you doing...
So at night, I try to wind down. So I usually after dinner, I don't like to work, although sometimes I have to do some stuff. But I usually have a nice dinner on the early side. I usually leave at least 3 hours before going to bed, at least. Between eating and going to sleep. Mm-hmm. I get off screens for at least an hour or two before, and I usually take a hot bath if I have a bath like available. So a hot bath with Epsom salt, lavender oil, which lowers cortisol. Mm-hmm. I'll do maybe some breath work or deep breathing. I'll read a little bit at night and then go to sleep.
How do you deal with time changes? Because you just came from New York.
Yeah. So, you know, the things that work for me for jet lag and time reset is, you know, this timing of, you know, I don't drink alcohol almost ever. So that can be screwing up. Caffeine, you know, you have to know timing. But my routine is basically to exercise and to do a sauna if I can't get a massage. And that like resets my system. And I'm...
Oh, so you're exercising in the morning?
In the morning, yeah.
Okay. And so that sort of gets your body going and it tells your body that you're... On the particular time zone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Final parting words of advice for people trying to live longer, feel better, be healthy?
I mean, I think this has never been a more exciting time to be alive because we're having radical advances in our understanding of science and science of creating health. We're having technologies like wearables that allow us to track our biology. We're now having access to things like function health, which allow us to look under the hood much deeper with AI-informed machine learning tools to help us guide our practices in self-care and medical care. And so I would say to people, this is a moment where it's important to take stock, because what we know is that disease doesn't just happen, boom. You don't just get diabetes or heart disease or cancer or dementia overnight. These are things that go on for decades in this slow, slow simmering burn. That now we can be able to identify these transitions from wellness to disease early, and be able to reverse those transitions and get back to wellness. And that's really the hope and the promise of Function Health.
I mean, we were just sitting back, you know, chopping it up, reminiscing about the good old days and all that, you know, tracking my roots, where I came from, and